Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
It's estimated that there are 10 million more cats in the United States than dogs. That's almost 82 million cats as of the end of 2006, and the number continues to rise. But with the increasing popularity of cats, the fact that these furry felines receive less veterinary medical care than their canine cousins makes you want to yowl. The latest figures reveal that in a single year, 83% of dog owners take their dog to the veterinarian, as compared to only 64% of cat owners. Are cats just healthier than dogs? No, they can experience just as many maladies as dogs. Today, I'll be speaking with the president of the American Association of Feline Practitioners, Dr. Valerie Crichton. We'll discuss how to recognize if your cat is sick as a dog, and what to do to ensure that your feline friend experiences the best quality of its nine lives. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Welcome to Personals.com. As a fellow cat owner, I know how finicky we are. From our friendships to our loves to just about everything, not any old website is going to satisfy us. Here at Personals.com, cat lovers from all walks of life can celebrate the photos, the stories, and videos of their beloved family member. And if you're single, here's your chance to meet someone who's perfect for you. Share your personality today for free. See you soon.
Personals.com. That's PURRSONALS.com. Finally, a place to meet that special person.
Flight 291 is now boarding. All passengers, please proceed to gate 4.
And who's this traveling with us today?
This is Bailey. She's never flown Midwest Airlines before.
Hi, Bailey. She'll be fine. We take special care of our traveling pets. In fact, our Premier Pet Program was created by an employee and dog lover who believes that pets should be handled as precious cargo. And they are. Oh, and they earn travel rewards too.
Oh, good.
Thanks for flying Midwest Airlines, Bailey. Enjoy your flight. Visit MidwestAirlines.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.FidoFriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Want to know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Dock. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Crichton, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, it's wonderful to be here.
And I have one of my kitties on my lap right now, Divot, my little gray kid. And I have to admit, there are times when I look at her that, gee, she just didn't eat breakfast. Is that a sick cat? You know, or am I just being the neurotic owner? Why do you think that people aren't taking their cats in as frequently as dogs?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's certainly a complex problem. I don't think there's any one simple reason. I can tell you three reasons that seem pretty obvious to us. One of the challenges is the way our society views cats as almost disposable or interchangeable pets. You know, the image of the cat in our society is just as a creature who is less dependent on us than a dog is. I think the concept that cats are low maintenance, maybe because they don't need to be walked twice a day, has led to the misperception that cats are self-maintaining somehow and don't need medical care like dogs do. There's also the fact that many cat owners who want to be responsible pet owners just simply don't know what they're supposed to do to care for that cat. Puppies, for example, a lot of puppies come from breeders and pet stores where they get informed on how to care for that puppy as it grows older, whereas many kittens originally come from private parties who have a litter or stray cats, and so the owner is not informed as to the standard of care. And a third obstacle, I would say, as any cat owner knows, it's far more difficult to bring the cat to the veterinarian compared to the dog. It's just more stressful in most cases for both the cat and the owner to get the cat into the vet hospital.
I totally agree with you. A dog is kind of all over you, constantly in your face. And my two cats, every once in a while, I have to look at them going, are you still alive? Because they're just snoozing in that sunbeam. And, you know, they move from little sunbeam to sunbeam. And, oh, they could care less. I go out, come back, going, that's nice to see you again. Where's the food if, you know, they really are going to be bothering me? Why should a pet owner go through all the trauma, and what are some hints of getting that cat to the veterinarian? We know it needs to go in, but what are some hints? How do you get your cat there? He sees you coming with a carrier and is under the bed.
Right. He sees you coming with the carrier, and to the cat, I've always imagined that carrier is like bringing out the electric chair and just saying, here, kitty, come sit in the electric chair for me. You know, it might as well be. You, as soon as you even look at the closet where that carrier is, they are under the bed, and you need to get the jaws of life to extract them out of there. And I think the reason for that is that cats, well, kittens have a certain period when they're young, when they're open to new experiences. And as they reach adulthood, sometimes even by 6 or 8 months, they're starting to close those doors, and they don't really want to explore new experiences. They want the predictable. And so many kittens are kept in their regular environment, and they're not taken around except occasionally to the veterinarian where it's a medical experience, it's not a neutral experience, and they just don't get handled enough. And it really, really can help if you handle these kittens when they're young and travel with them, then they will be far more open to that experience as they get older, and it won't be so traumatic.
So sometimes taking them to the veterinarian just for a happy visit. So they go and we don't do terrible things to them like stick thermometers in their bums or give them a shot, but just kind of show up, get a treat, and leave. Would you suggest doing something like that?
That's right. In fact, some of the more progressive feline-only practices have implemented something that's commonly called kitten kindergarten, where it's sort of like a kitten class. People can bring their kittens in, and for a non-medical socialization session in the hospital, often it's a group setting where there's other kittens, but they get used to being handled by strangers, playing with the other kittens, and of course traveling without the negative influence of medical procedures being done to them. And also finding a good carrier that can be both top and side loaded is helpful. Especially if you can leave the carrier out in the home someplace all the time. So it's just more like a benign piece of furniture to the cat, a nice place to curl up in rather than the electric chair scenario that I was talking about.
One of the things that drives me crazy when people bring in a cat to my clinic is they'll just have it in their arms or wrapped up in a towel. It's like, no, I'm on a very busy street. I said, gee, would you like me just to give you a carrier? Do you have one at home? Oh, no, no, it just sits in my lap. That drives me crazy. It shouldn't be free in the car. It shouldn't be in your arms. Something can happen. I tell people, if you have nothing else, pop them in a pillowcase, especially if there's a reason you need to get out of the house quickly. You can't find your carrier. Put them in a pillowcase. Put some type of ribbon around the top. You have a cat in a bag. It can still breathe. It may not be the best carrier, but it's an emergency situation. It's probably a little bit safer.
Yeah, that is so true. The pillowcase is actually a brilliant idea. We recommend that to owners all the time when they, for whatever reason, cannot get their cat in the conventional carrier. Cats like to feel safe in a little bit of an enclosed space. And if you've ever had your cat crawl under the brake pedal while you're driving, you will never put your cat loose in the car again.
Well, hopefully people are listening to that and realize it. With cats coming into the practice, we know that dogs need their vaccines, and so do cats. But many times people say, well, my cat's totally indoors. Why do I need to vaccinate it? What would be your response to that?
Well, many of the diseases that we vaccinate for, in fact, some of the very, very serious and fatal diseases that we vaccinate for in cats are airborne viruses, and they don't need to have direct contact exposure to get them. Just a cat walking through the backyard who is infected can easily infect an indoor-only cat. So keeping a cat indoors is definitely not a reason to not vaccinate that cat. Vaccinations in cats are probably done less frequently than they used to be. We're finding that they don't need to have the vaccinations every single year in many cases. But on the other hand, cats really do require some wellness examinations at least once a year, if not more so, just because they age so much more quickly than people do. Everything happens faster, diseases progress faster, and the signs of sickness in a cat are so much more subtle than they are in the dog or a person.
What would be some of the signs that a person can look for that says, just something's different, something's wrong? What should they be aware of?
Well, that's a great question, and actually I'd love to refer your listeners also, while we're talking about it, to a website from a campaign that we're currently, the American Association of Feline Practitioners is currently involved in. It's called Healthy Cats for Life, and the website is just healthycatsforlife.com, but it points out the top 10 subtle signs of sickness in cats, and some of those are things that you just wouldn't think about. Changes in interaction with people, for example, can be a sign of pain in the cat. Cats don't walk around vocalizing like you would think that they would or like a dog would when they feel pain. They actually tend to withdraw instead. And for example, changes in activity, a cat becoming less active, of course, lots of cats like to sleep 16 to 20 hours a day and it's normal for them, but decreases in activity in the cat are their primary sign that they show when they have arthritis. You would think that they would limp like a dog does or a person does, but they don't. They just move around less.
What would be some of the other signs? So we have a cat that doesn't want to interact as much. Sometimes changes in appetite, attitude.
Changes in appetite, definitely. Even increases in appetite, which may look healthy to the cat owner, can indicate actually imbalances and diseases in the cat. But yes, changes in food and water consumption, changes in sleeping habits. Again, even if they're sleeping less and more active than they used to be, that can be a tip-off to certain types of hormone imbalances. Changes in grooming. Cats are very fastidious groomers. They will stop grooming as much whenever they get sick for any reason. But sometimes they can increase grooming when they're feeling stress or if they have some source of pain. Other signs of stress, usually those are behaviors linked to changes in the household. Like if you get a new cat in the house or you move households or a cat dies in the house and you notice any dramatic change in your cat's behavior or lifestyle, that could be a sign that that cat's really stressed out by what the change that just occurred. Changes in vocalization, cats that meow more than they used to. That can be a symptom of all things high blood pressure, which is called the silent killer in people, and it is in cats as well. Cats are susceptible to high blood pressure, and that can be treated. Bad breath is another example. It can indicate gum disease, which seems sort of obvious, but also internal problems and imbalances can manifest as bad breath in the cat.
Well, we have been chatting right now with Dr. Valerie Crichton, and she's been telling us some great reasons why cat owners should be aware of what's going on with their kitties. That subtle can actually be very significant. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these short messages, and we'll be talking to Dr. Crichton again about how to keep our kitties healthy. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at petplanetmagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Ready to take a walk? Not just you, but your whole family. It's the 2008 Whisker Walk, Sunday, June 8th from 9 to 4 at the Lancaster Fairground in Lancaster, Massachusetts. Pet owners and animal lovers walk to lend a paw to benefit the animal shelters and pet charities they love. Come see exhibits, demonstrations, educational programs, special attractions, product giveaways, entertainment, auctions, raffles, food, fun, and things for adults and kids to see, do, and buy, both human and pet-related. Whisker Walk 2008, a fun day for everyone. For more information, log on to whiskerwalk.org.
That's it. You're madder than a junkyard dog, and you're not going to take it anymore. Your feathers are ruffled, your dander is up, and you've got a definite bone to pick. Join us each week on Pet Peeves, the show that lets you dig through the dirt and unleash your passion for pets. Your host, pet expert and award-winning author, Amy Shojai, will talk about what makes you howl and what hisses you off. Pet Peeves, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Crichton, you've been giving us some great information. You talked a little bit about vaccines. I know many of my clients come in concerned about, gee, I hear that there are problems associated with vaccines, some vaccines causing cancer. How do you address that?
Like I mentioned, we have looked into this a great deal over recent years, ever since we first identified that there was, in fact, a problem with some vaccines. Really, any vaccine or injection potentially can cause a serious reaction or a cancerous tumor to grow under the skin of the cat. It's a very, very rare reaction. It's maybe 1 in 10,000 vaccinations that are given can cause one of these severe reactions or a cancerous tumor. But because it's such a serious side effect, we take it very seriously, and we want to make sure that the risk of the disease is considered against the risk of the side effect. And we're developing vaccines that are far less irritating and given by different routes so they avoid the problem, and we're better defining how often the cats truly need to be vaccinated for many of these illnesses instead of, and we really try to avoid over-vaccinating and exposing the cat to any undue risk. But it is a very rare problem, but it's one that we've taken very seriously.
What does the American Association of Feline Practitioners recommend with regard to giving rabies vaccines to totally indoor cats?
Rabies vaccination is a particular issue because rabies is a public health risk to people. So in many parts of the country, there's no choice. It is required by law in dogs and cats. In some parts of the country, for instance, most communities where I live here in Southern California, rabies is not a high risk and is not required by law in cats. So there are some options there. Because rabies is not an airborne virus. But in much of the country, rabies is a significant risk to cats and to people. And so there's just no two ways about it. They have to be vaccinated for rabies. Most rabies vaccines nowadays can be given only once every 3 years, though, instead of annually. So that minimizes the risk.
That's great. And oftentimes people that have those indoor-outdoor cats or outdoor cats here in Southern California know that bats are a real source of rabies. And you have a kitty who goes, wow, look at that mouse that flies and it's not flying very high. I think I should play with it. And that's a potential source of exposure for that cat and then exposure for the family. So yes, it is a definite concern and something that I think each cat owner needs to discuss on a case-by-case basis with their veterinarian, depending on where they live and what the risk value is.
That's exactly right. Bats really are mice with wings. And I should point out that rabies in the United States, actually globally, but in the United States, cats are the number one domestic animal diagnosed with rabies. It's not dogs like you would think. So we really do have to be particularly careful with the risk of exposure of our cats to rabies.
And another thing that they're exposed to in the United States, thankfully not very common in Southern California, but is heartworm disease. And that's a disease that people think, oh, rabies and dogs and heartworm and dogs. Could you discuss a little bit about what the risk is for a cat, even though if it's an indoor cat, and this heartworm situation?
Cats are certainly at risk for heartworm disease far more than we used to think. And as is typical of cats, they don't just get obvious heartworm disease. It's easy to diagnose like dogs do. They get an atypical form of heartworms that can be very insidious and cause a lot of illness and certainly cause a lot of death in cats, but it's difficult to diagnose. Cats that are indoor, we know, are not immune. In fact, indoor cats and outdoor cats both seem to be at risk for heartworm. And cats get heartworms with about one-tenth the incidence of dogs. So for every 10 dogs that are positive for heartworm, there's a cat out there that's getting it too. They get it the same way dogs do, by getting mosquito bites. And mosquitoes do come indoors, much as we try to keep them out. So they tend to get bitten on their ears or their nose, exposed areas of skin like that, and they can contract heartworm that way.
And you're saying that they are, being typical cats, very atypical, hard to diagnose. Testing for this particular disease, prevention of the disease, what is a great way to prevent it, since testing we know is difficult?
Prevention is the easy part. That's the good news. Prevention is easy. It's not very expensive, and it's very effective and does not make the cat sick at all. They can take one of a variety of once monthly medications that are either applied topically or taken internally. And so cat owners should talk to their veterinarians if there are heartworms at all in their area in dogs, which many areas do have heartworms now that did not used to, then the cat really should be on preventive. It's so much easier to prevent than to test the cat to even see if it has heartworms, or certainly to treat the cat, which is virtually impossible to treat the cat effectively once it's got heartworms.
And I know that some of the preventatives that are out there, trying to get a pill down a cat's throat is definitely easier said than done. Thankfully, they even have just topicals that you can apply it to the skin, something you'll be getting through your veterinarian that makes the whole procedure so non-stressful for the owner as well as the cat. So, such a good way of going. You had mentioned earlier about cats and sometimes being subtly sneaky about those disease signs. And I think that's very common as we have our senior cats. As cats are getting older, thankfully they're getting longer lifespans because great care by the owner, advances in veterinary medicine. Some of the problems that you're going to see in older cats, what would they be? What can people look for? How can they help them?
Some of the most common things we're seeing in older cats today, older cats are at least as prone to getting cancer as older people are. And that can come in such a variety of forms that, again, it really comes down to looking for the subtle signs of illness, and one of which is unexplained weight loss or gain. And, of course, weight loss, if you recognize weight loss in your cat, you're probably going to think, gee, I wonder if she's all right. But one challenge is, do you really know if your cat's lost weight? For a 10-pound cat to lose a half a pound, that's a significant amount of weight loss. And yet, most of us as owners, especially if the half pound of weight loss has happened over a couple of months or more, it's not very noticeable to us. So it's important to bring your cat in, especially your senior cat. They really probably should go in twice a year for a regular wellness visit, and that will include weighing on a little baby scale that can detect as little as a quarter pound of change in body weight. In addition to cancer, we deal a lot nowadays with diabetes in cats. It's a huge issue. Thyroid imbalances, which are treatable. Diabetes is manageable. Chronic kidney problems, which cats can live with for 2 years or even much longer with proper home care. Those are some of the examples of the sort of the big ones that we see.
I was reading in the newspaper recently, and this was something on the internet, about Alzheimer's disease. And I think most people think, how do you know if a cat is not all there anymore? Kitty dementia. What would you see with a kitty in kitty dementia? And is there something can be done?
Well, that is true. Cats do get, they call it senile cognitive dysfunction, but it's just sort of cat senility. And like every other organ in their bodies and in ours, the brain can decide to deteriorate in certain ways. Changes in behavior, especially changes in interaction that happen. Some older cats will start vocalizing a lot at night. Sometimes they'll sound distressed at times, like they walk into a room and it's almost like they can't remember why they went in there. You know, that happens to us too, and so I can really identify when I had my cats do that. But sometimes they just sound confused. Sometimes they will start to inappropriately eliminate. They might urinate or defecate outside the box where they never used to. But those types of changes in behavior can be a tip-off. Aggression or not interacting with another cat, changes in the relationships with the other cats in the household. There are some medications now that can be used with varying success to calm cats down that have this sort of sundowner syndrome like people have, where they're awake and restless and vocalizing at night, or to help them regain an easier ability to use the litter box where they've lost it. And it's also worth pointing out that sometimes they can stop using the litter box if the sides are too high, if they're having a little arthritis. It's just not quite worth jumping in that box compared to going on the carpet next to it. So that's something to keep in mind.
Great idea. So yes, we are definitely having our kitties live longer periods of time because we're keeping them indoors. And keeping these kitties indoors, too many times people say, well, I don't need to have a collar on my cat. It doesn't like the collar. What are your feelings about identification and indoor pets or pets in general?
I think identification, there's just no downside to having identification. Sure, you may not let your cat out voluntarily, but you never know when someone else is going to inadvertently, somebody that's working in the home. And my fear, of course, living here in Southern California, is always what happens in the case of an earthquake. You know, you might be throwing the doors open, or they might not close properly and your cat might get out. It might not normally wander out of your house, but if it's a cat that's afraid, can do unusual things. So collars are not harmful to cats. We do recommend what's called breakaway collars so that if a substantial amount of tension's put on the collar, like the cat, that they will break away instead of causing strangling the cat or causing harm. Another form of ID that's very popular now, ever more popular, is the microchip, which is really very painlessly injected into under the skin of the cat or dog, does not cause any reaction, and it retains the information that the owner can keep updated at a central source. And that information can be scanned using a scanner that shelters carry and veterinary offices carry. And it's really something to think about, remembering, say, Katrina that happened and all the tragedy of trying to reunite pets, and a lot of those were cats, with their owners.
I know sometimes my kitties scoot outside and they're not supposed to, and though I call and call and call, and I know they're looking at me from under a bush someplace going, yep, I'm not coming to you. So I totally agree. My own cats wear collars, they have microchips, and I'm always just so afraid because I live here in Southern California too. Earthquakes, fires, floods, almost anything can happen. Dr. Crichton, I really appreciate you being on the show today. Can you tell the listeners again your website so people can go to and learn more about this Catalyst program and how to keep their kitties happy and safe and healthy?
Yes, I am the president, as you mentioned, of the American Association of Feline Practitioners, which is an organization of veterinary professionals who are passionate about the health and well-being of cats. We do have a new website that we're pretty excited about. It's called catvets.com, so that's an easy one, catvets.com. And it does have a public portal that is open and we're continuing to develop, where cat owners can find out about important information about common feline health issues. And also we have a Find a Veterinarian section on there if you want to find either a feline-only veterinarian in your area or a veterinarian who may not be feline-only but who really cares a lot about feline medicine enough to become a member of our association.
Great information. Thank you so much. We've been listening and chatting today with Dr. Valerie Crichton. Gave us some marvelous information on keeping those kitties healthy. And along with her, our goal today has been to entertain, educate, and to motivate you to be the best pet owner that you can be. If you have any questions, always call your own primary veterinarian first. But if you want a second opinion or just want to run something by me, please feel free to contact me at the pet doctor at PetLifeRadio.com. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Thank you so much for being with us today. Please come back next week and learn more about how to keep your pet healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.